Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Rich Tillery, Chief Pilot for Airline Transport Professionals and FAST Team Lead Representative from Jacksonville, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. Have you ever thought to yourself, especially you flight instructors out there, that go through a little bit of anxiety when it's ready for you to step out of the plane and making that big decision? Well, a lot of guys out there have done some research, but probably none more than my next guest. My guest is Ernie Strange. Ernie Strange is a pilot examiner and has been for about 20 years. He's also the former president of the National Aviation Safety Foundation, in which he is still an active board member. Ernie, welcome to Managing Safety.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Hey, look, Ernie, I know you guys out there have done a lot of work. You put a lot of effort into this thing. Let's talk a little bit about why we're having this show right now, why we're talking about this, these accidents and stuff that were that are related to these flight instructors getting out of this airplane. Tell us about some of the stuff that you guys have done.
Well, yes, Rich, and as you know, just to introduce the subject, one of the most important things we do in life as in aviation as instructors is solo the students. And what that means is that the instructor is getting out of the airplane and the student is going by themselves. And for everybody who's ever experienced that, that's a momentous time in your life, and you'll never forget it. Well, for the past few years, one of the leading categories in aviation, flight training accidents and incidences, is the student pilot on their first, second, and third solo flight. And because of that, it is important for us to research this and find out what any problems are that exist and how to fix them. Yes, sir.
Okay. The we talk about the first, second, and third solo flight. Typically, this is where the guy's going to be. The instructor's going to get out on this first one, probably a supervised solo, and of course, probably the second or third one probably going to be on a cross-country flight, correct?
Well, maybe, yes, but really the basics are that first landing, second landing as a student pilot, and making sure that the student is ready to be up there by themselves. They have all the tools to make that a successful flight.
Yeah, we get, and it is such a big thing here. And all you guys have out there, especially, have done a lot of research in this. Let me ask you a question. Have you found any answers?
Well, yeah, we have, Rich. One of the things that we're finding is that the primary students are taught by the youngest in aviation, and the more experienced instructors are teaching the advanced students. And so each instructor who's ever soloed a student muses as they're contemplating, is it time to get out? Is my student properly trained? And do they have the tools? But systemically, it's odd that the youngest, least experienced, least equipped to make this decision are the ones that we have making the decision. So that kind of points to a weakness right there. Additionally, Rich, we've discovered that there's not a standard for this. So the youngest instructor has no guidance, and they're operating in a vacuum. And systemically, this is proven to be something that really operates contrary to the safety that we all are looking forward to in aviation.
Yeah. Now, Ernie, when I know that you also do initial CFI flight checks. The check ride for the initial CFI, is this a really hard, a really big emphasis point for you guys when you're out there doing these check rides?
Well, yes, Rich, it certainly is. And one thing I will tell you is that in our local FISDO area where I operate, there is quite a bit of emphasis on this area in the southeast United States, because there's a lot of flight training going on in this particular area. So, yes, this is something that's hit pretty hard. But the idea when you're working on solo and a student, it's a very unique situation. Every student's different. Every instructor's different. Every airport's different. So in the testing situation, it's hard to discuss exactly where that judgment needs to be made. However, their standards of performance is the thing we're trying to, in our research, hang our hat on, that the standards of performance on the part of the student, that's a very, very critical part of when to get out.
Ernie, yeah, now we're going to talk about some of these tools that you're talking about later on in our show, but I just want to get a side, I just ask a little side thing. With a lot of aircraft that are now coming into the market, there's a lot of, I know that Cessna's come up with a training airplane, and a lot of overseas companies have come up with these training airplanes. Do you see the problem being with you know, the current 172, 152 Cherokee-type aircraft, or is the accident rate specific to any specific type of aircraft, maybe a newer airplane?
I wouldn't characterize a particular aircraft as being able to point to a problem, Rich. No, I would say that the idea is that when the flight instructor is not certain that the student is ready to go, they shouldn't let them go. And the other thing is helping to develop a keener sense of when that student is actually ready based on performance standards rather than on a particular airframe.
I see. Now the accident rates that we look at here, you know, first, second, third, solo, is this a nationwide? Are you gathering data nationwide, or is this on just the area from which you guys are drawing your data?
It is nationwide, Rich. The data down here in the southeastern United States points more deeply into the problem, and the only reason why I would say that is the southeastern United States is where the bulk of flight training nationwide is concentrated on because of all of the large flight schools being in the southeastern United States. So. But it, traditionally, it's a nationwide thing.
I see. Now, I know that where you guys are at, if you guys as the pilot examiner cadre, if you're testing it, they will teach it, and I imagine that where you're from, a lot of the examiners in your area are probably, you know, they're putting a lot of emphasis on the landings as far as a private pilot applicant goes.
Yeah, Rich, they are, but more importantly than, you know, the actual recognition of a good landing is more being able to accurately measure the good landing. And the other thing to throw into that equation is the fact that the new flight instructor right now is teaching right up until the point where they get out of the airplane, and there's not time for them to where they're stepping back and actually evaluating the student in a sterilized testing environment where no training is going on, where they're actually watching and evaluating performance. And so getting the new instructors to sit back and evaluate is a critical component.
That's great. Ernie, I tell you what, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, everybody, we're going to talk a little bit about this, some of the tools and everything, and some of the ways and some of our thought processes that the instructor should be using before soloing their students. Everybody just stand by. We'll be right back after this word.
Now, let's rejoin Rich Tillery and Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios.
Hello, everybody. We're back. I'm Rich Tillery, your host for Managing Safety, and we're joined today by Ernie Strange. He's a pilot examiner in the southeastern region down in the Orlando Fisdale area, and we're talking about soloing our students and some of the tools and standards that which we can probably help these guys out to where we don't have these accidents, speaking about some of the accident rate with training students, not just people that are out there flying, but actual training is typically is the first, second, and third solo flight, loss of control, and typically on the landing. Ernie, welcome back.
Thank you, Rich.
Ernie, before we left out of here, we were talking a little bit about some of the stuff, and I said we'd come back and talk some of the tools. So is there a solution for what's happening here?
Well, yes, Rich, there is. The first thing I think we need to do is talk about standards of performance that we can actually measure. And measuring those standards in a sterilized testing environment, in other words, the instructor is quiet and observing the student's performance and actually evaluating. The other thing, if possible, if there's a second opinion, you know, when you go for a private pilot certificate, the instructor thinks they're ready. All of the training requirements are met, but they have to send them to somebody like myself for a second opinion. And oddly enough, in the youngest of aviation, where the most risk occurs, nobody has to ask for that second opinion. So those are standards based on performance is the key, though, I'd say.
Okay. You know, when a guy gets ready to solo somebody, is it typical when these guys are out here trying to get all their stuff together to take a guy to? I mean, do you have a preference on where they should solo somebody? Not so much the standard, but like where they should go. Do you think they ought to be in like an uncontrolled airport, generic environment where there's hardly anybody around, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters, Rich. When you look at it, if you're from the big city and all the airports have towers, that's what you're going to find yourself instructing. That's you have to operate in that environment. So I wouldn't say that, you know, if you pick the perfect airport in the perfect part of the United States, then the weather will be bad. So I mean, there's always something. But I kind of go back to some of the bullet points that we made in our research for actually performance.
Well, Ernie, let's talk about some of those. There is a process, right?
Well, yes, there is, Rich. The process is spelled out by the government, but what we're actually missing, once again, is the standards. And you know, these are common sense if you have experience as a flight instructor, but if you're new instructors, like most of the folks who are doing this, the standards and the common sense might be eluding you a little bit. So that's why we took the time, several of us, and put this standards for solo together.
I'm looking at it right now. It looks really good. We're pretty thorough. Yeah, let's go over some of the bullets if you want to. We got a little bit of time.
I'd love to.
All right. Now, I remember one time you told me back a while back, you said, actually, I don't think you told me. I think you said it as a blanket statement when you were addressing a lot of flight instructors, because you've been doing that a lot over your years as a flight instructor and a pilot examiner. You said that the student's job is to work that instructor out of a job.
That's exactly right. And if the instructor was doing that, but, you know, as instructors, when our students are making a mistake, we usually step in and let them know. And that is a requirement, but when you're doing the solo part about it, when the student is working themselves into these situations, maybe that requires a go-around as an example, if you're
right.
The one that prompts the go-around, then you can't safely say that the student recognizes the circumstances under which a go-around needs to occur. So, yes, the instructor does need to evaluate quietly.
Okay, let's go over some of these. In order to solo, my student must be able to, one, make competent go, no-go decisions for every flight. And that's not just the flight, but competent decisions on, just like you said, the go-around.
Yes. Rich, it's very important that the student must be, from the first day, encouraged to make decisions. One of the most important decisions every pilot can make is the decision to get in the air or not to get in the air. And I find it helpful over the years that whether you override the decision and you actually tell them, yes, it's a windy day, so you didn't think we were going, but we need to go anyway because you need to experience the weather, you need to let them make the decision based on the factors that are around them.
Great. Okay, number two, determine the location of all of the traffic while in the pattern.
Yes, Rich, when you're soloing your student, you got to have an awareness of where the other airplanes are, so you know whether to extend the downwind or maybe delay powering back or plan for a shorter approach, and these are very important factors, yes.
Establish and maintain a stabilized approach, that's number three, and I know that's a one-hour class for you guys, just if you want to expand
yes.
Just a little bit.
A stabilized approach is the basis for all landings, and I would tell you airlines, non-airlines, everywhere, if the approach is not stabilized at a certain point, the pilot, whoever he is, must make the decision that it's not stabilized. Rather than to try to fix it, it's time to go around and try it again. Absolutely.
Okay. Great. Determine wind direction and make proper rudder and aileron inputs. That sounds like that would knock out some of those loss of control.
Yes, Rich, one of the things in this area, I think if the student will verbalize an awareness of where the wind's coming from and which rudder and aileron they're going to put in, a lot of the unknowns are there. if the student is silently doing this and they're incorrect in their decision, it increases the length of time before the flight instructor is aware of that. So obviously, if the student makes this part of their conscious, verbalized input for every landing, it helps.
Great. From the bullet number five, manage the aircraft's energy so landings occur at the touchdown point.
Yes, Rich, this starts with the stabilized approach, obviously, but when you think about it, if the airplane has too much energy in terms of speed or power or altitude, it's not going to translate into a touchdown at the touchdown point. And the faster we're honest with ourselves as pilots about the condition of the aircraft's energy, the more wise we can make that decision.
That's great. Land with and then maintain the proper pitch attitude.
Yeah, Rich. When you look at this, most students, when they are touching down, all control inputs are released with the hands and the feet because the airplane's on the ground. It's
sure.
Time to relax. And
yep, that's right.
At
I made
that
it.
Point, it's like any good sporting of thing, and you know you have to follow through. And so in that point of view, is maintaining control inputs after touchdown is very important.
It is important. It's number seven, keep the longitudinal axis parallel to and over the runway centerline. That looks like it goes hand in hand with I made it to the runway, I'm going to relax.
Oh, absolutely. And keeping the aileron correction in for crosswind would be an example. But the other thing is touching down with a side load. And you probably, most pilots, if they've experienced that, a little lurching to the side as the airplane is aimed one way and flying in another, you'll experience that. So the idea that we wouldn't have that would be the case.
That's right. Keeping the center line between the main wheels throughout all takeoffs and landings. That sounds kind of important too.
Yeah, Rich, it does. But, you know, oddly enough, we kind of allow the student to drift off the center line and accept that as they didn't hurt anything, therefore they had control. And so if this is, once again, just applying a standard, making a standard and applying the standard. So if the student knows that if the main wheel gets on two main wheels are on the same side of the center line stripe, there's a problem and they need to fix it. That's important.
All right. Correctly and positively respond to any abnormality or emergency. And this is the solo student, correct?
Right, Rich. And in the training environment, we simulate emergencies and have the student respond accordingly. That would be go-around, among other things, but the engine failures at certain points in the pattern are kind of important. What's not an emergency would be as an abnormality, but having the student deal with something that's not normal. As many times as I've soloed students, Rich, I would tell you while you're standing there watching them as a flight instructor, you're a little helpless. And it always seems that this circumstance is when something different occurs and you pray that your student has the appropriate amount of common sense. And the way to make sure that is doing that ahead of time is putting as many abnormalities and emergency scenarios before them as possible.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're with them for a very, very long time. We're only with them for like an hour and a half, right?
That's right. In
the air anyway. All right, communicate properly and effectively with other traffic or ATC. That sounds pretty important too.
It is, Rich. When you find the guy out there in a solo flight, if they can't effectively communicate with the other aircraft in the case of a non-towered airport or with ATC at a towered airport, then you really got to wonder, is their functionality as a pilot, you know? So it's very important that those skills are developed so that they can follow instructions while still being able to fly the airplane and develop a sense of awareness.
That's great. I want to read this last blurb after all those 10 excellent points that we just made. If my student cannot perform these functions without any guidance or assistance from me, they are not ready for solo yet. That's great. Guys, that's about all the time we're coming up with for today. I would like to thank Ernie Strange for being with me.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. For more safety information, please, you can visit www.faaproductionstudios.com. That's all one word. Or www.nationalaviationsafetyfoundation.org if you need some more guidance. Ernie, can these guys pick these little cards up? Because these are on a handy little card. Can they pick these up at that website or download them?
They will soon, Rich. Right at this point in time, they don't have the capability, but we're passing these out at every safety seminar. So anywhere you go that involves safety, and if you can ask for these things, well, we'll sure try to get them out to you.
Okay, great. And guys, this is going to be streamed, so if you want to play it back and write them down, that'd be great. But just keep this in mind. If you don't want to wind up on a slideshow or a statistic anywhere, just listen to what some of these guys have been doing. They have put a lot of energy into this. Ernie, thanks again.
You bet, Rich. Thanks.
Okay, guys, I'm Rich Tillery for Managing Safety, and I hope you have a great day.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.